Wednesdays, it's This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Anna, good morning. Let's go back to This Week in 1961. Bozo history, huh?
Oh, Bob, good morning. So many of our listeners will have fond memories of this. The Bozo Show debuted in 1961, This Week. Bozo the Clown, of course, was a cartoon series first, featuring Bob Bell, who later became Bozo the Clown in the full one-hour version, lunchtime TV version for kids. So popular out of the gates. And, you know, even though there were other Bozos in some other cities, the Chicago Bozo was the most popular by far because WGN became a superstation. And you could watch, if you didn't have a Bozo in your town, you had the Chicago Bozo. We pulled a clip here, Bob. Great clip. WGN's coverage of the 17th anniversary of the Bozo Show, 1978. WGN had just become a superstation, and now people were watching Bozo all across the country.
From Chicago, the 17th anniversary celebration for Bozo Circus is on the air.
Today marked the 17th year of Bozo Circus. Emanating live from the WGN studios 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, the show is so popular there's a 7-year wait for audience tickets. Every kid loves Bozo, even the grown-up types. They like his sidekicks, too. Cookie the Clown, Frasier Thomas, Garfield Goose, and Tommy Fitzsimmons and his Big Top Band. Each show is a surprise. Chicago's Mayor Bilandic was a guest.
Well, on behalf of all the citizens of the city of Chicago, we want to proclaim this a very important day, just like the 4th of July, Christmas, Mother's Day. Today is Bozo Day in the city of Chicago.
Hey, it's Bozo Day.
Some people would say it's Bozo Day a lot. check your mailbox. You may have those Bozo tickets in the mail today if you ordered them.
You just might if you'd order them back then. I know my mom ordered them when we were like 1 and 2, and I think we went when we were 8 or 9. So there you go.
Yeah, it was a big demand, no doubt about it. Let's talk about Rose Hill Cemetery because it's really quite an historic place, isn't it?
Such a historic place. It makes me want to go walk through it, actually, just doing the research for this piece, Bob, because, you know, we know that so many, you know, legendary names and major figures throughout Chicago history are buried there. But this week, 1859, Rose Hill Cemetery opened up, and at the time, it was considered land that was out there. It was 7 miles north of the city and, you know, kind of farmland. It wasn't considered really even part of the city. But a walk through Rose Hill is like a walk through Chicago history today. Here's how it started. There was this farmer named Hiram Rowe, and he had the land that was kind of up on a hill, and the first mayor of Chicago, William Ogden, wanted that land. He wanted to create a cemetery that was something that was very respectful at a time when a lot of cemeteries were kind of, you know, they were just the kind of let go, and they weren't really, you know, respectful places. They were a place to bury the dead, but they weren't what the mayor had envisioned. He wanted to build this glorious kind of a shrine to the city's dead and make it a place that people would want to visit over time. So he went to this landowner, Hiram Rowe, and said, I want the land. And he said, nope, I'm not going to do it. And he said, well, what if we call it Rose Hill after you and kind of put a little of the ego in there? And apparently that's part of how they cut the deal. That is one story out there that has, you know, over the test of time, some people have pushed back on it a little bit, but there definitely was a Hiram Rowe back then, a landowner at the time. Mm-hmm. So we got the land, and there you go. It's like, you know, to this day, it's like you think about who's buried there, Bob. It's the final resting place for some of the most notorious and notable people in the city. The victims of the St. Valentine's Massacre are buried there. The founder of Sears, more than a dozen Chicago mayors are there. You've got soldiers and generals from every war, memorials to every war, a firefighter's memorial. The founder of Leo Burnett is buried there. The hot dog mogul, Oscar Mayer. He's there too. Jack Brickhouse, philanthropist John G. Shedd. You know, it makes you really just want to do a walking tour of it, you know, and I know occasionally they do have these. You can go online and look. Once in a while, you get somebody, a docent, who will walk you around and talk about it. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Sears and Montgomery Ward, by the way, buried right across from each other. They call them bitter rivals in life and neighbors in death. And there they are in the cemetery.
Interesting. 5800 North Ravenswood, Rose Hill Cemetery. Let's talk about the beginning of Vince Vaughn's career this week in 1988.
This was huge, Bob. If you think about it, here's Vince Vaughn, this Lake Forest High School graduate, you know, big dreams of somehow getting into the film business. He had landed this week a national television commercial, just a recent high school grad, a Chevy commercial, and he was part of it. It was the big break he needed in order to attract an agent. And he immediately moved to Los Angeles at that point. Fun backstory, Vince Vaughn tells this too. He says he had a really close friend at Lake Forest High School who auditioned for a role in the city one day, like senior year, and he cut class to join him and just sat outside. The casting agent pulled him in and said, hey, yeah, you, come on over here. Let's try to, you know, let's see how you can do. And he got a part. So that was like the break that caused the Chevy commercial break kind of thing. So he had a little experience, but Swingers, of course, was the thing that made his name. We all know that. Cult film, such a great film that he wrote and starred in. And we pulled a little clip, I think. Is that what we pulled a clip from? Yeah, a clip from that. We pulled a clip from when Vince Vaughn was just 26 years old. Swingers had just become a hit, and here he is being interviewed by MTV News.
You know, you just got this great movie come out, critically acclaimed already. I think it's pretty funny. You know, you got this Lost World thing going on. How money do you feel right now, man?
How money do you feel? Oh, cash money. I feel good, man. You know, I feel good, really, where Swingers is concerned, because it's a movie my friend wrote for me and for himself, and, you know, just to be able to make it's quite an accomplishment for us. And, you know, John gave me a shot when a lot of people wouldn't give me a shot, so, you know, feels pretty good. And then The Lost World, of course, you know, I grew up watching Stevens movies, E.T. and Jaws and stuff like that. I wouldn't swim in the pool after I saw that. You know, no oceans where I grew up in Illinois. But, so it's, you know, pretty amazing. I feel real, real fortunate right now, Buzz, to be given these opportunities that I've been given.
Quite a box office hit, wasn't it?
Mm, so true, Bob. And the John he mentions is John Favreau, who was a friend of his in Hollywood, also starred in the movie. Heather Graham was in the movie. Just no looking back for Vince Vaughn after that point. So pretty cool to see how he did it.
Yeah, and he comes back here all the time. Yeah, that movie was made for $200,000.
Someday we'll go out of the way.
Yeah, any better, and that was partly recorded at Wrigley Field, wasn't it, Anna?
You know, here in the city, he recorded it right in front of Cubs fans, Bob. The year was 2008 when that was debuted, and, you know, it just kind of channeled light into every Cubs fan's dark, disappointed soul. And I've gone back to that song a few times, I know we all have, but that actually, when it debuted, the Cubs were headed to the playoffs, so it was a hopeful year. He made it, he wrote the song, and debuted it mostly because it was 100 years since the Cubs had won the World Series, and so it was time for that song. Recorded, as you say, partly Auditorium Theater was another spot where he recorded some of that, Bob, and debuted it in front of Cubs fans there too. Ernie Banks, true story, had been urging Eddie Vedder to write a Cubs song. Why don't you write a Cubs song? And finally he did, and that was it. And then he wrote a special tribute version and performed one when Ernie Banks died a few years later. Also, kind of cool that many of our listeners will remember there was another version, the last version I know of, 8 years later, debuted in 2016 when the Cubs really did go all the way, and that one was a video version featuring clips from Harry Carey predicting that, yes, Cubs fans, this day will come. Pretty cool.
And Eddie still loves to go out to the ballpark.
Totally.
I didn't know that the first nationwide rental car network and the first one to open at an airport right here in Chicago.
One of those hidden gems of history, Chicago history, Bob. It's a man by the name of Walter Jacobs. Not Walter Jacobson, but Walter Jacobs. he wasn't around then, I don't think. But this guy was 22 years old at the time, 1918. And he just started renting cars in what would kind of be the South Loop area. He had a dozen Model Ts. And he thought, well, what about, wouldn't people want to have a Model T for a day or maybe a weekend to take a spin? And he was a success. You know, he had about a dozen of them, and people were renting them like crazy. A man named John Hertz entered the picture, local businessman who then offered to buy the business, and he did. But Jacob stayed on with the company until 1960 when he retired. He stayed with forever. The company's, you know, over 100 years, and it's been like the whole motto has been speed, fast, reliable service. And remember back then, we had O.J. Simpson as the guy who was the face of Hertz. He would run through the airport and talk about how fast it was going to be and his car's ready and stuff like that. We pulled one of the first O.J. Simpson ads from for Hertz from the 1970s.
coming or going on a business trip, you've got no time to waste. And nobody knows that better than Hertz. Whether it's picking up or dropping off your Ford or other fine car, nobody has more to do it faster.
Go, OJ, go!
Get in, get you out with super speed. The superstar in rent-a-car.
You know it.
I don't think Hertz will be bringing OJ back anytime soon as their spokesman.
No longer a coveted brand spokesman, but was for many years for Hertz.
Yep. And finally, we talk a lot about hot dog history around here, but sure. Don't forget the bun, right?
Bob, what is it? Doesn't the bun matter? I mean, the
bun. Of course
bun,
it does.
It does. The real Chicago hot dog bun with the poppy seeds, it matters. And so it's interesting to look at the history of this. The delicious poppy seed bun was first produced by the Mary Ann Baking Company in Chicago. They were bought by another local baker, the Alpha Baking Company, which then also bought S. Rosen's, another Chicago baking company run by Sam Rosen. And they pooled the resources, the recipes, and the facilities of all three to form Alpha, still in existence today. They use Rosen's, S. Rosen's, as one of the brand names. That's why it may be familiar to you. But they still make some of the tastiest buns in the business, still sell under S. Rosen's, and they also supply 95% of the hot dog stands across the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool to think all those years ago. That's
so
how it started.
S. Rosen's, that's the brand to get. That's the one with the historic roots. Don't forget to steam the bun. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Bob.
Next Wednesday.